Hockey Podcast with Brian Metzer, the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. Tim Benz with you. Thanksgiving week. Everybody thinks football for Thanksgiving, but we're still talking hockey as we get set for a lot more Penguins hockey this week after last week. You know, it's always this week, the Wednesday game before Thanksgiving. That's a tradition, of course, and everybody looks forward to that contest. The Penguins winning three games last week. We haven't been able to talk about a lot of wins with Mets so far this year. Maybe in the early portion of the season, but then that seven-game losing streak put the air brakes on the whole year. You can listen to Mets Pens Live weekly on Saturdays with Paul Steigerwald. Intermissions post-game as well on the Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network. Mets, all is right with the world again, I guess, huh?
It's amazing what a week can do, right, Tim? I mean, if you look at just a week or so ago, everyone thought Sidney Crosby was done. He wasn't very productive. He was struggling. Jake Guentzel was struggling. The top line was terrible defensively. The sky was falling. And as you just pointed to, they go on a road trip. Sid has 10 points in three games. The Penguins win three games, some of which not in beautiful fashion, but wins are wins. And just like that, the Penguins right back in spitting distance of all the playoff teams. They're only 9 points removed from the New Jersey Devils, who have lost only once in their last 16 games. And I only mention that because you would think a team that won 15 of 16 would be further ahead. But they're not, because the Penguins are right there. And now just 2 points out of second in the Metropolitan Division, which is just remarkable to think of at this point.
Mets, of the three games, strangely enough, the one I liked the most was the win against Winnipeg, because that was the kind of game they had to win. It was a one-goal third-period lead. Winnipeg plays a tough defensive brand of hockey. They don't allow special teams goals. And the Penguins, in that situation, were just going to put themselves behind the eight ball if they chased to try to make the lead greater, and they were smart. And they won a game that was tight, low-scoring, and very defensive-oriented, goal keeping oriented, and Jari was better than Hellebuck, and that was the difference.
You're right about that. I would totally agree, though. That is the one I found most impressive as well, Tim, not just because it was a shutout, but the fact that it was so tight. I mean, you were scoreless going to the third. The Penguins were able to get the first goal in the game. Then you had them pressure Hellebuck into a terrible turnover. It's like, hey, buddy, that's Sidney Crosby heading to the corner when you try and dump the puck there. Maybe you shouldn't have done that. But they just did a really nice job of containing what Winnipeg was trying to do. It's not as if they are bereft of talented offensive players. I know they don't play a run-and-gun style, and they are more defensive. But Kyle Connor is there. Mark Scheifele's there. Blake Wheeler's had some big offensive seasons. And yet the Penguins were able to limit the opportunities. Kyle Connor's the only one that was really dangerous in the game. I think he had 5 shots on goal, but none of them were off second and third opportunities. They cleaned up garbage in front of Jari pretty well. And it also helped right Jari, because he hadn't been on the top of his game heading into this stretch. So all of that came together and it coalesced in a really, really impressive 3-0 victory. So it was big to get two in a row, and even bigger to get a third whenever they were able to go into Chicago and beat them. And it was a weird night too, Tim, because of the prolonged Marian Hossa celebration. We were expecting a face-off to be at 7 p.m., maybe 7:08 in our time zone. And the next thing you know, there was a confusion in the United Center. The guys were still having their warm-up whenever this pregame show ended, and we didn't get the proper timing. So Phil Bork and Josh Getzoff had to kill upwards of almost a half an hour before the game after pregame ended. So I think that helped the guys go out and put that 5-3 effort together. But Winnipeg, certainly an impressive victory.
The game against the Blackhawks was the complete contrast to the game against the Jets, in the sense that they won a game that I didn't want to see them have to win in that fashion. You know, they're up 3-0. Yep. They blew the lead, and then Crosby gets the goal at the 16:46 mark, the 10th of the season for Crosby. Guentzel and Letang set him up. That's all well and good, but again, it was after a blown third-period lead, a blown three-goal lead. And those are the kinds of games that I want to see them avoid.
And I think what was worse about it, Tim, is the way that they blew the lead, too. If it's one thing if a team, you know, you're exchanging chances and you're both scoring goals and they just come roaring back. But in this case, the Penguins did everything in their power to give those three goals back, which was so disheartening. The Kara goal was one in which I don't know what was happening. You saw a play come out of the corner. Jake Guentzel tried to make a pass, I think, to Marcus Pettersson. It was picked off by Kara for the Blackhawks and knocked into an area where Dickinson could carry it across the goal mouth. Chris Letang was dead to rights because he lost Dickinson earlier before the turnover even happened. And then the next thing you know, they get their first goal. The Kane goal came off of a breakdown in the defensive zone. And then the next one was an egregious turnover from Jeff Petrie, where I don't know if he thought that the forward who was just swinging through the back of the net like the Penguins tend to do when a defenseman has the puck, if he thought he was going to put it into Evgeny Malkin's skates and have him pick it up. But instead, he passed it right to Philip Kurashev, who was standing on the goal line and scored from an impossible angle off the back of Casey DeSmith. So that was the most disheartening aspect of it, was bad defensive play in their own zone once again. And that is something that, even for all the feel-good vibe of a three-game winning streak, has got to be cleaned up. Because I guess it was the beginning part of this, because it's now 5-1-1 in their last seven. The first two wins of that, they were better defensively as well. But there are moments in these games where they have these egregious breakdowns, and that's putting their goaltending under duress and creating these situations where you need Sidney Crosby to take over in a third period to try and get the 2 points.
How did Hossa look? I mean, with everything that's been paid attention to about why he retired, the skin condition and all that.
Yeah, weird allergy or something, yeah.
How is he? How does he look physically?
Like most of these guys, Tim, he looked young, virile. He looked like he could dress for the game. The pictures I saw and the video I saw, he looked wonderful. And he looked like Marian Hossa. And that's kind of the weird thing. Isn't it strange? Whenever a guy steps away from pro sports, it doesn't matter if it's the NFL or the NHL specifically, but in the NFL, it's kind of like, okay, you were a big burly lineman. Now you're like 150 pounds and you look younger and all this kind of stuff. The NHL is the same way. You might see a guy that looks like a grizzled vet, gray hair, big grays in his beard and everything. And then he pops up on the NHL network looking like he's 10 years younger. That's kind of the way Hossa was. I was surprised he didn't have any weirdness to his appearance. He didn't look gaunt or anything. He looked like Marian Hossa. So he's aged pretty well. And if not for that weird ailment, he might still be hanging around in the league at this point. I know he'd be in the twilight of his career, but it's unfortunate that it was cut a little bit short. They did a really nice job. They had a huge stage for him. They had a lot of his former teammates were there, including Patrick Sharp. I think I saw Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook. And of course, Kane and Taves were available. So it was truly reuniting the band for that feel-good moment. The only problem is it just wore on way too long. I think the great Wayne Gretzky Anderson told me they were told that ceremony was taking place roughly 2 hours before the game. And then, as I told you, the teams were still warming up whenever they should have been just about ready for puck drop. So they were almost a half hour behind due to the pregame ceremony.
Wow, that is so frustrating from a broadcast standpoint when that happens. It really is. I feel for everybody involved. I've heard that happen before to Borky and Getzlaf. I think that happened at one point in Philadelphia, if I'm remembering correctly, not too terribly long ago. Hey, did Sid remind Hossa that he just passed him on the goal scoring chart?
I'm not sure that I saw that moment, you know, if Sid was able to rub that in his face at all, but you can still always just look back on the "I never want to be in this photo again" Stanley Cup ad that resulted following the loss with Marian Hossa, in which Sid went on to win the Stanley Cup the next season.
I think Brian Trottier, who was also passed by Sid when he had those two goals, it was in the Minnesota game I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Trottier that night got passed on various lists by Malkin, Sid, and Ovechkin, like all on the same night. I can't remember what the three pack was, but I think Ovechkin passed him in points. I think Sid passed him in goals. And I think Gino passed him on like Penguins games played or something like that. There was some combination. And like I had three notes and Trottier was passed on all three of them.
Yeah, I just was trying to bring up the goal list here so we could do it quick. Sid did jump past Hossa, obviously. He's two ahead of him now, and Trotz was at 524 in terms of the goals. So he did go past him there. For the assists, where's Trotz? Here he is. Sid passed him in assists. He's up to 909, so just a couple games back, he was able to do that. And then when you look in terms of points, we'll sort that list. Brian Trottier passed by Sidney Crosby with 1,436, Trotz at 1,425. So There may have been other players that jumped past.
And Ovechkin passed him categories. For something, too. I can't remember what it was. But it was
yeah,
just...
Ovi's 2 points ahead of him in terms of points right now. You'll see that
points.
All season.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll see it all season, Tim, because as the league keeps reminding us, Sid and Ovi have practically the same amount of points on a night-in and night-out basis. But, oh, wait, Sid's hot start has him 10 ahead of Ovechkin at this point in the season. He's at 1436, while Alex is now at 1427.
Well, Mitch, we've got the Wednesday night pre-Thanksgiving game to keep an eye on. That's coming up next for the Penguins against the Calgary Flames. Is that usually the drunkest that you tend to see the audience at PPG Paints Arena?
Rookie night in Pittsburgh? No, Tim, not at all. And people often wonder what you mean by that. Well, every college student's home from school for a holiday with their family. Everybody decides it's a good night to go out drinking, even when they live in town. So, yes, I do anticipate a air of, a hubris that resulted from much alcohol intake in that arena. And I'm sure that that will be going on in and around the city as well. But it is usually a good night in the building. I'm curious to see how this one is. The last game against Toronto on the 15th of November wasn't super populous. There were some empty seats in the building, and that one usually fills up simply based on the fact that the fans travel down from south or from north of the border. And in this case, you still have some people to travel for Calgary, not like you do for Toronto. But I think that this is one the Penguins would like to notch as a sellout. I don't know that we'll get it, though, but it should be a fun night in the barn.
Calgary is scuffling. They've only won 3 of their last 10. One other point I want to bring up, Mets, I want to get your take on a conversation that I've had with Mark Madden the last couple times we've spoken together, podcasts and our live stream on the Trib Live Facebook feed, Madden Ben's Unfiltered. If I give you Crosby, Malkin, Lemieux, Jágr, how do you rank them in terms of Penguins' importance? Seeing as how Gino just played his 1,000th game. And by the way, I also want your opinions on another thing that I put out on Madden Ben's Unfiltered. I think it would have been funny if Gino's kid had introduced the starting lineups and gotten through Pettersson, Jari, Letang, Zucker, Rust, and then when it came time to announce the center, just announced Sid. I think that would have been funny.
That would have been tremendous, but I think his emotions started to kick in. And whether his dad was starting or not, Tim, I think he would have announced his father in that moment, which, boy, that was a really cool feel-good one. But we all know that for the longest time, Gino did insinuate that Nikita's favorite player was Sidney Crosby, and Sid spent some time over at Shea, Malkin, and Sewickley, and I've watched him in some photos and things hang out with him. So, yeah, that would have been a great moment. And the rankings that you want me to go through, you said Crosby, Lemieux, Jágr, Malkin, right?
Yeah, 1 through 4 in Penguins
okay.
history.
Yeah, I think Mario Lemieux, of course, is number one, and that is because of not only his accolades on the ice, his all-world skill, but his ability to save the team on multiple occasions, not only as a player, but as an owner. So that's number one. I think I'm going to go with Sidney Crosby as number two, simply because Sid not only goes out and is going to make himself a top five player in National Hockey League history before it's all said and done, but he can also be credited with saving a team in Pittsburgh because they were on the cusp of moving to maybe Kansas City at the time of his drafting, and then coming to town, they exploded in terms of season tickets. Some people say Sid left his fingerprints on getting the new arena, which he tag-teamed with Mario Lemieux. So that's one and two. I would say, and this one will be the one that people will roll their eyes at, but even though Jágr won a Stanley Cup here, it was only one, so I'm putting Gino 3.
Wait, I thought he won 2. I thought Jágr won 2.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. I'm just being a jerk because I knew I was going to get it. Yeah, Jágr and Lemieux won 2 together. 91 and 92. And that was the last ones that Jágr got in Pittsburgh. But Gino, he's got his 3 Stanley Cups. He has got his ton of individual accolades here in Pittsburgh. You can also credit him with helping Sid keep seats, butts in seats here in Pittsburgh. And then Jágr's, I'm going to put forth simply based on the fact that he wasn't here for near the even bulk of his career. He was only here. Actually, if you look at it, he played elsewhere longer than he played in Pittsburgh. That doesn't diminish his time in Pittsburgh, but he is a guy that accomplished a lot while he was here. But in the grand scheme, I think the other 3 probably did more in terms of being on that Mount Rushmore in Pittsburgh. And I'm going to get eye rolls and I'm going to get tomatoes thrown at me for that. But that's how I rank him.
And then, of course, Smith and 6, Derek Brassard and Alexei Ponikarovsky, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, I would put on Alex Stoyanov too. I think he...
How about Kasperi Kapanen?
Well, Kapanen, you know what? The book is unwritten yet, Tim. He's still rolling up his legend on a night-in and night-out basis. Sadly, though, most of his best moves right now involve picking some popcorn kernels from his teats, probably, because Mike Sullivan has him nailed to the press box bench, and that's probably a good thing because he had really dipped. And I will add this. Yager was three for a long time for me, but I think Gino staying in Pittsburgh, finishing his career here, winning the three cups, all the individual trophies, the Conn Smythe, the Rookie of the Year. I mean, only three players in NHL history have the Calder, a Conn Smythe, and an MVP. And that I believe it's Gino, Bobby Orr, and Mario Lemieux. So that's pretty impressive. And I put him up there.
Mets, appreciate it. Thanks a bunch. We'll do it again next week. Have a happy holiday.
You too, Tim. Great to get together with you. Enjoy your turkey. Don't do too much damage on rookie night, and we'll do this again next week, I imagine.
Well, I'm calling a game at Duquesne across the street on rookie night, so my hope is that ends about a half hour earlier than the hockey game, and that way I don't have to, you know, do the slalom thing around the drunks on the way home.
And through that construction now, too, Lord knows that's a godsend, right? Is it not on a game
night? It took me an hour from the north side for the Maple Leaf game. And it was. I think that's why you didn't see anybody in the building. I think people literally just stopped and turned around and said, forget about it. Like, I'm not going to get there until the second period anyway.
Yeah, we're out of here. I know it took me, I don't know if that was that night or the game before, 20 minutes on the Vets Bridge alone coming down 279. And then I sat in traffic all around the arena trying to get up Center Avenue and to get to my garage that I park in. And boy, I won't be complaining when the building is completed and the construction goes away. And what did they do all summer is what I want to know. They clearly left it until hockey began.
Just go to morning skate and hang out there afterwards. That's probably the best option.
Yeah, I'll pull the there was a former broadcaster that used to work for the team that used to try and live at the arena, if you recall. Maybe I'll take a feather out of his cap and just start to live at PPG Paints Arena.
Brian Metzer, Pittsburgh Penguins Radio Network.